Welcome back to the sound plays of Traversity, Demons and Demigods, Book 2 of A Bridge of Doom. Seeing as you're still with us and enjoy what we offer, please rate, review, and share. Questions and compliments can always be sent to our email listed with the description of each episode. I know you've repeatedly heard my request for donations, so enough said.
Well, I'll be darned. I am a jelly donut. Need a coffee. Ask not what your podcast can do for you, but what you can do for your podcast. Thank you.
Special thanks go to our first coffee angels, Juanita Paz Chalacha and Raven Kiefer. And thank you truly for listening.
Lockpins out!
With the game!
Step through the gateway and enter the universe of the Harkin Theater. This is episode 29.
This is book 2 of A Bridge of Doom by Kurt Paul Hotelling. Traversity, Demons and Demigods. The Journeys of an Enchanter.
Chapter 27. Darkness. Pressure. So much pressure within and without. The enchanter held his breath desperately as the irresistible tug of four scaly hands dragged him down further and further. He hadn't imagined the marsh could be so deep and impenetrably dark. His eyes uselessly probed ahead and around, discerning nothing except the painful grip of his captors and building pressure of water all around. Fire started in his lungs, the last gasp of air used up, his body needing fresh, and it was all he could do to keep from involuntarily surrendering this last shred of life and taking the final breath of water that would end his suffering. He tried to glance around to see if his wife or his friends were nearby, but saw only blackness. Then their direction shifted. They were going up towards a faint glimmer of green light. Suddenly, his head was bobbing above the water, and the terrible ache in his chest subsided, while around him, his opinions compeered, each gratefully filling their lungs, except for Gon, who was coughing and sputtering violently. Only Ablui seemed unbothered by the long time under, but then, Gaewon mused, he had a barrel-sized chest capable of holding a lot of air. The lizard men, two on each, promptly pulled everyone ashore where many other reptile people milled about. They were in an underground cavern, the pool being the only immediate entrance or exit. The naturally formed walls held numerous thick veins of a faintly glowing mineral. The eerie light reflected off the pool, giving the grotto a vivid green cast. The enchanter and his companions were shoved, dragged, and pulled through the crowd of lizards, then forced toward a cage constructed of thick, dried river stalks lashed to each other and anchored alongside one high wall of the cavern. As the cage was opened for them, Gaewon decided this was enough. opening himself to the bestial forces lurking deep in his awareness. He shifted form into a were-tiger and tore himself from his surprised captor's grasp, then swiped razor claws at the nearest reptile. Ablui did the same, his pale-haired figure transforming into a large brown bear, then swatted aside the surprised pair of lizards. They backed away and poked uselessly with club and spear at the fighting werebeasts.
Hey, come on.
Thasgar and Clough dragged Gon, who had fallen unconscious, behind the tiger and bear, where Flayna waited, keeping Gawain's altar form between herself and the nearest lizard man. Another commotion erupted at the pool, more lizard men popping out of the water, dragging a giant dead frog behind them. A majority of the reptiles attempting to strike the bear or tiger immediately ran to the pool and joined others jostling for a place. Frog, apparently the preferred delicacy over human flesh. Seeing them back off and judging Ablui's altar form to give them sufficient defense, Gawain resumed his human form, stood up and turned to watch Thasgar and Clough trying to administer to Gon. The dwarf was pale, almost blue, and not breathing.
Roll him over on his stomach. He's got water in his lungs.
Aye.
Thasgar leaned out of the way as she pressed her hands into Gon's back just below his ribcage.
Come on, Gon. Out with it.
It took several long moments before his sturdy body jerked, a handful of marsh water spewing out of his mouth. Thasgar grabbed his friend's arms and started slapping them until he could see some color returning. Still in his defiant, furry altar form, Ablui paced back and forth, keeping the scared lizards a good distance away.
Will he be all right?
I think so. He'll need to rest for a few moments before we move.
Move? Where to? I don't like the idea of another swim.
Up this wall. Gawain, come look.
Clough pointed up the craggy surface to where a ledge could be seen 6 man-lengths above. 2 lizard men stood upon it, leaning on spears, watching the turmoil below.
Think we can scale it? Must be a tunnel up there.
We have no rope.
We can use the lashings on this cage.
Clough jerked his head at the thick strands of flexible vines bonding the cross pieces.
That'll take some time.
Gawain noted the vine knots looked very tight.
Ablui!
The werebear cocked his head back for a moment.
Can you hold them off until we get a rope pieced together?
The bear lumbered forward and swiped at the closest lizards, who waved their spears uselessly, jumped back, then pointed.
How do we get a rope up there?
Gon was sitting up.
I'll climb up with me chisel and pick.
He pulled tools from his belt and wiggled them angrily.
Just like a spider on a wall.
You sure? You swallowed a good mouthful there.
Aiming a wad of marshy-tasting saliva in the direction of the lizards.
Yeah.
Gon demonstrated his fitness by deliberately getting on his feet and staggering his way over to Gawain and Clough. He met the elf's doubtful gaze with a frown that dared opposition, which earned him a smile in return.
Which way?
Toward those 2 guards on that ledge.
I can carry a rope while I climb a wall, but I can't defend myself and hang on with me teeth.
You just get up there. I'll take care of those 2. Let's get that rope.
Immediately, everyone started prying at the weedy knots and pulling on loose strands while their werebear companions stalked back and forth, keeping their captors at bay. Gon was evidently feeling better as he tested both climbing pick and chisel on the rock. It was harder than the sedimentary stone he might have expected in an underground grotto, but his tools held keen enough points to leave good-sized pocks with which he could anchor himself as he climbed up.
We'd better hurry.
Several of the lizard people were getting organized enough to find a net they prepared to fling over the werebear. It was fortunate the reptile's fishing spears were not crafted for throwing.
Else escape will be next to impossible.
Start climbing, Gon.
Gawain handed him one end of the growing rope.
We'll tie on links as you go.
Right.
Gon tucked his end of the rope under his belt and started up, chisel in one hand, pick in the other, finding or making purchases with which to lift himself. Flayna watched with admiration and imagined how the muscles of his shorter arms corded and flexed beneath the sleeves of his wet gambeson as he pulled himself up.
My.
Meanwhile, more of the reptiles were jumping in to help with carrying the net in Ablui's direction. The net must have weighed almost 100 stones from the size of it. Concerned, Gawain glanced up and gauged the amount of time it would take Gon to reach the top against the tossing of the net and the completion of the rope Thasgar and Clough and Flayna feverishly knotted together.
Give me that. Make sure that's tight.
Though it would probably take many more lizard men to manage their feet, the majority of them still hovering over the partially ravaged frog.
This will be close.
There was only one way he could think of to delay the reptiles, and it would have to wait until the last possible moment. It wasn't long before the sentry lizards atop the ledge noticed Gon climbing toward them, and they prepared to drop their spears on him.
If only I had my bow, I would have had a clear shot at both those lizards' throats.
As it was, with nothing but their blades, they were forced to rely on Gawain's abilities, of which there was no doubt in their effectiveness, but her intuition warned her...
We will find our escape only through the enchanter.
If he was somehow struck down or subdued, they would very likely be trapped. Therefore...
Protecting him is of the highest importance.
As she stepped to his side and unsheathed her sword, Gawain flung a hand upwards, sending fiery spears darting directly for the sentries, their flash dimming the green light for an instant. Caught off guard by the attack, both lost their balance as they sought to cover their faces against the white fire and dropped down the wall. Gon pulled himself over the edge and anchored his pick as far as it would go in the rock, then lashed the rope to it.
Climb up, it's ready!
Gawain!
Flayna saw the lizard men massing for their attack, the werebear backing toward his friends. The enchanter took up a stance before Ablui, held palms facing the ground, then twisted his torso as he spread his arms out, invoking a huge wall of gold flame roaring up from the rock between him and the attackers. Then he turned and pointed to the ledge.
Hurry! I can't hold this for very long.
Thasgar and Clough were already halfway up the wall as Gon urged them on from above. Ablui shifted back to human form, glanced questioningly at the enchanter, who motioned with his head for him to go ahead, then leaped onto the vine rope and started tugging himself up. Sword ready, Flayna held her place next to her husband as he concentrated on maintaining the wall of fire. The magical flames proved highly effective against the water creatures, who panicked while others behind them jumped up and down with fury. Those still toting the heavy net spoke among themselves, decided their plan would still work, and proceeded to position themselves as best they could for flinging the intricate weave of vines over the enchanter.
Flayna! Gawain!
Flayna glanced behind to see Ablui almost to the top, then looked at Gawain to see his brow breaking out in a sweat even though they were back from the heat.
Go, Flayna!
She was indecisive, not wanting to leave him alone, but knowing there was no other way for her to escape. Gawain resolved her conflict, flashing glowing eyes at her, a different voice erupting from his throat.
Go!
The visage of controlled power that looked upon her frightened her so much, she could not help but immediately obey, sheathing her sword and jumping onto the rope. Heat rising from below made her sweat profusely as she climbed. Her hands slipped twice as she was pulling herself up. Cursing her clumsiness for taking so long, she caught herself, bracing her feet on the wall. Then, the brightness and the heat were gone. She wanted to turn and look, possibly jump back down and defend Gawain, but resisted the strong urge, knowing to keep climbing. There was excitement, followed by the rustle and rumble of the net being tossed. In the next instant, though she was still one length from the ledge, the vine was being pulled up, her with it.
Oh,
She was lifted up and over the edge. Gon pulled her aside as Thasgar, Clef, and Ablui continued pulling.
Over here, Flayta. Out of the way.
From below, it sounded as if the lizard people had succeeded, though it was difficult to tell. At the very least, they were excited about something. Flayta scrambled to her feet and peered down below. More than 20 lizards ringed the thrown net, poking spears at various lumps underneath. At the same time, the vine was being pulled up, but nothing could be seen hanging on it. Gaewon had made himself invisible to prevent giving the lizards a target at which to possibly toss their points. Soon the vine went slack, sending the three men into a tumble in the tunnel. The enchanter unclasped his wet cloak, appearing on his side on the ground, his cheek scarred and bleeding.
They clipped me with one of the stone weights on the netting. I barely got to the rope in time.
Gon watched below.
Can't stay here.
Having discovered their prey absent from beneath the net, the lizards had finally noticed where they had gone and were disappearing into other tunnel openings lower on the wall.
I'll lead the way.
He scampered up the tunnel past the others. Not questioning his expertise on the underground, everyone followed. They were forced to duck their heads frequently, the rough ceiling dipping down abruptly at odd intervals. To help them see ahead more clearly, Gaewon conjured a wisp of light to follow his dwarven friend, who wasn't bothered by the unpredictable tunnel height. It wasn't very long before they came upon a main intersection with six other tunnels going off in different directions, some slanting down suddenly, others curving off. A hubbub of scrambling feet, clunking spears, and reptiles echoed throughout the chamber, there being no way to tell from whence they were coming, and the lizards had no need for light to find their way. Gon took a step into each opening and decided on one that seemed to stay level.
This way.
Just as Ablui, who was bringing up the rear, entered the tunnel, he heard several lizards behind him enter the intersection from another hole. Unable to see more than their luminescent eyes blinking at him out of the dark, the only light having gone ahead with Gaewon and Gon, he decided a hasty retreat was wisest and hurried after the others. After only a few dozen steps, however, he bumped into Thasgar's back.
What's the holdup? They'll be following any moment.
Gon's not sure about this route.
The archer crouched to give Ablui a view ahead. Gon was walking suspiciously forward, feeling the walls while his friends watched. After a moment, he shook his head and came back towards them.
I don't like it. It's going down. We want to go up.
We'll have to fight our way back into the intersection.
The priest kept his ear cocked for sounds of pursuit. Strangely, there was none.
They saw me enter this tunnel.
They may not have followed if this is a single branch. A fight would be very difficult in such close quarters.
Ablui perceived a shadow of fear in the enchanter as he stared down the direction they had been headed. Something other than the immediate chase worried him. Casting his psychic senses forward, he found cause for that fear. Nothing specific, but a definite coldness radiated, like that of a bottomless chasm of the darker astral regions, and he was reminded of their earlier encounter above ground with the demon.
We go back!
Gon wormed his way between everyone, Gaewon's sphere following him dutifully, and started back the direction from which they had come. It was on their way back that they noticed the upward slant of the tunnel, something only Gon had been able to sense. When they neared the entryway, the sound of rocks being dropped along with what could only be called reptilian laughing reverberated down the tunnel. The light sphere following Gon vanished.
Hold!
Gaewon continued past his friends. Gon felt a reassuring pat on his back as Gaewon moved stealthily ahead. The dwarf could see a faint glimmer on the walls, the reflection of the lizard people's luminous eyes. In the next instant, everyone was forced to shut their eyes against the blinding white that flashed from ahead.
Come along, hurry!
Arriving at the entryway a few moments later, their eyes still awash with the after effects of the crystal's fire, the enchanter's companions found him kicking and shoving stones that had been stacked in their way, confirming Gon's suspicions and Ablui's unspoken discovery. The lizards had tried to seal up the entryway and leave them to whatever lay in wait down below in the unending night of the tunnel.
How do you do that?
Do what? Gaewon still held his glowing crystal before him as he looked about the intersection, then allowed the stone's fire to ebb as he invoked another sphere of light. His cheek still burned, though it had stopped bleeding.
Make them all run away like that.
It's the crystal that scares them, not me.
Can you scare up a way out of here with it?
Gon shoved a rock out of his way and glanced down each branch again, looking for some indication of a way up, but finding nothing more than a few stones the lizard people had dropped in their flight from Gaewon's crystal.
Or see the way out like you do when you look at someone far away?
Would that I could. Flayna moved to his side and rested a hand on his shoulder. He could tell by her expression that she knew how tired he was getting.
What now? We can't just wander around down here for the next quarter.
There was a renewed hubbub of scurrying lizards throughout the small camp.
Whoa! Those reptiles leave a sour body odor behind.
What you expect when you're swimming all the time and eating frogs?
Noting that he could not smell anything out of the ordinary, and supposing he was used to whatever Clough was complaining about, Gaewon remembered his ward mate,
Glink.
After their abduction and arrival in the grotto, he had worried briefly over Glink.
Oh, Glink.
Relieved to discover the mudcat safely curled up in his favorite pouch of his cloak lining.
Oh, Glink. An air pocket must have kept him from drowning.
Glink was decidedly miffed with being wet and forced to remain in the pouch.
My fellow.
Gaewon had not wanted to risk losing his furry companion during their harried escape, and he was sure Glink would have been a quick tidbit for the ravenous lizard people.
Here.
He released him from his pouch with quick mental instructions to seek the way out by using his olfactory powers.
You've given me an idea, Clough. We'll let Glink show us the way.
Haste would be wise. They'll be following again soon, and will no doubt try to chase us into another dead-end hole.
And I have not the strength to call forth the crystal's fire again until I've had some rest. Gaewon didn't want to worry his friends any more than necessary.
Perhaps I won't need to.
He hoped. He was betting on the effect of mass fear of the crystal's fire among the lizards to afford them time. Glink, meanwhile, took a moment to sneeze and rub paws over his face, then investigated the chamber, taking heed of his master's note that the rock sitting in one entryway marked it as dangerous. All remained silent as they watched the mudcat scamper up one direction, then promptly return and proceed to the next. It was the fourth tunnel that offered a glimmer of hope. Glink detected the faintest scent of fresh air. Relaying his discovery to Gaewon, he headed that direction, obeying his master's instruction to not get very far ahead. With relief, the group left the intersecting chamber behind, but immediately doubted Glink's abilities as the tunnel went down sharply, one of the reasons Gon had avoided it in the first place, then went sideways, forcing them to straddle a small stream that came from nowhere, trickled for a dozen steps, and disappeared again through a small hole.
Easy, easy.
Tempers shortened as they slipped and grappled their way, but they persevered. There seemed to be no immediate pursuit, the passageway growing quiet behind them. Without warning, the tunnel ended in a wall.
Damn.
Yet there was a definite change in the air. Upon querying his wardmate, Gaewon was instructed to look up.
Where is it? Where are we?
Above was a narrow shaft reaching four man lengths and ending with no apparent way out.
Damn.
With a motion of his hand, Gaewon halted the rising comments from his companions and sent his light sphere up to the top of the shaft in case there was an opening hidden in shadow. There was none. And by this time, what scent there was had been consumed, foiling any further attempts on Glink's part.
Wait!
Clough squinted his eyes at the ceiling.
Move your light over to the side, Gaewon. Do you see it?
What?
Roots.
Roots?
Before anyone could argue, Clough jumped up, braced his feet on the walls of the shaft, and carefully lifted himself toward the ceiling.
Gawain kept his spear hovering over the top until the elf reached it.
Roots!
He pulled one free, then dropped it to his friends.
There's a couple of cracks up to the outside.
He slipped his hands into the holes and found they fit. Then he pushed up and for an instant saw a tangle of vines backed by starlight outside. Then the weight of the boulder capping the shaft forced him to release it. He could not brace himself securely and lift at the same time.
Oh, Thasgar, come up here. I need some help moving this rock.
After his turn of cursing and slipping, he was not as confident as Clough when it came to climbing. The archer was perched beside him, and the two of them easily shoved the boulder out of the way.
All right. Yes, sir. Here we go.
Waving Gawain's light back down, Clough adjusted his eyes to the dark, looked around, then hopped out. The well opened out on the crest of a small vine-covered hill nestled in a forest. After helping Thasgar out...
Thank you, Clough.
Clough peered down to see the others starting to climb. Ablui carried Gon on his shoulders, the dwarf's legs too short to straddle the shaft, followed by Flayna, then Gawain with Glink around his neck. Clough unsheathed his sword and scouted out the immediate area. There were traces of a path leading down the hillside from the well, but it was overgrown from moons of disuse. Perhaps the lizard men had forgotten about this particular route. Meanwhile, Thasgar assisted the others out of the well.
Come, Gawain, here.
Then, with Ablui's help, rolled the boulder back in place.
That should leave the lizards with quite a mystery.
Indeed. Gawain's light sphere still hovered over his head. And we are posed with a mystery as well. Nearby, glad to be away from tunnels and lizards, Glink smelled a cluster of wildflowers.
Where are we?
No way to tell right now, but in the morning we should be able to see either the signal smoke of the Druid Temple or the blue horizon of the ocean. Gods, this whole thing has gone completely sour.
Clough returned from his patrol.
What about Chania? Perhaps we're close to her.
Everyone tacitly agreed that the situation had a slim chance of being true.
It was bad enough not knowing exactly where to meet her. Now we don't know where we are either. Can't you look in your crystal and see where she be?
That's a very good idea. Though I won't see more than her immediate surroundings.
At least you might be able to tell if she's on board her ship or in the wilderness.
Thankful that scrying for someone familiar didn't tax his mental strength as much as channeling forth the crystal's power, Gawain removed the stone from its pouch and searched within the dark facets as he placed an image of Chania in the forefront of his thoughts, knowing he would not be able to scry for more than a few moments. The crystal's interior went darker than normal, but showed nothing. Before he broke contact, he thought he could see a night sky through a ship's glassed window.
What do you see?
She's asleep on her ship, it would seem.
Hellfire! All this muck-hunting Calron, hiding from a dragon, lizards losing our equipment, and getting here to meet her and she's cozy on her damned ship.
There is no doubt good reason for her absence.
Well, wait a moment. What's that? Sounds like bees or something.
Let's get undercover!
Clough led everyone in a run in the dark down the slope into the trees. As they moved deeper, the noise sounded closer, forcing them to slow down and regroup.
Where are they? Look!
Clough pointed in the direction they had been heading. Through the forest ahead moved what appeared to be a stream of hundreds of individually flickering lanterns darting along just beneath the branches, lighting for an instant, then just as quickly vanishing.
Fireflies?
She shook her head in disbelief.
Too big.
So are the frogs around here. Let's go see.
Clough led the way through the trees toward the flowing, undulating sparks. The trees stopped at the edge of a narrow beach over which the large insects flew. The flickering light reflected beyond in the expansive lake.
I've never seen bugs that big.
Flayna was mesmerized by their arm's length size as she started out onto the sand away from the protection of the wood.
Don't step out from the trees. Look closely. They have stingers.
It was difficult to detect at first, each insect's glow blinding the onlooker to anything other than the light. but the brief silhouettes of others passing left no doubt.
Fire wasps? Fascinated.
Oh, them stingers look the size to put a good hole in your arm.
I hate to imagine what the poison might do.
Gawain motioned his friends back from the tree line.
We'd better hide here until they're gone.
A glance in either direction only revealed what looked to be an endless river of bobbing lights speeding along the water's edge, giving the swamp an almost festive appearance.
"'Tis a pity such pretty things are so dangerous."
Flaina leaned on her husband as he rested against a musty-smelling bowl.
"This whole swamp is dangerous."
She was glad for a chance to simply sit and rest.
"Calron has gotten away, and Chania never made it inland. How will we get home, Gawain?"
"Gawain? Ah, yes. You're the one. Yes."
Feeling the surface beneath him move, Gawain grabbed Flaina as he jumped forward, then spun around as he invoked another ball of light. Though his energy was so low, he could only muster a pale green sphere. It was sufficient, however, the large snake's eyes reflecting back at him with unexpected benevolence.
"So Gillen has always been a place of danger."
A long silver tongue darted out from between its teeth.
"A cleature."
Gawain somehow recognized the winged snake. He wondered at how he could have known such a thing. He had never seen or even heard of such a beast, yet the name had popped out.
"It won't harm us."
Sighs of relief were heard as ready hands dropped from their only weapons saved in the lizard attack, swords, daggers, and various tools attached to belts, Gawain's companions trusting his statement without question.
"What did you call it? A what?"
"A cleature. Don't ask me how I know that."
"Yes, enchanter."
The serpent writhed its lower portion around the tree trunk, fluttered translucent wings, and lowered its head to meet his gaze with the group. It blinked almond-shaped eyes.
"You know of my kind?"
Totally befuddled, Gawain decided it was easiest to simply agree and not try to explain the mysterious way he had suddenly known.
"Yes. Well, you know of me?"
"The Princess Chania requested I find you."
"Chania? What's going on?"
"I will speak only with he named Gawain. It is fortunate that we crossed paths. I have been searching for more than 2 days."
"We were forced underground and have only just escaped. Your help is greatly appreciated."
Again, it blinked slowly at the enchanter.
"I am to give you a message."
Gawain wanted to ask how Chania earned a favor from such a rare creature as a cleature, but didn't want to tax its patience.
"What is the message, please?"
Lifting its head slightly and staring off into the night, the winged serpent astonished the group by speaking in Chania's voice.
"Tell Gawain that we were unable to get beyond the beachhead. We have been repeatedly attacked by scores of what we think are mountain men, though we don't know why they're out here. They are large brutes with clubs."
"Hillmen. Damn.
And we can't overpower their numbers. They smashed one of our skiffs and killed 7 of our crew, 2 of which they grabbed and tore apart. The best we can guess is they think we're some sort of fish people and we're food. I hope you haven't met them. Regrettably, we're forced to abandon our part of the manhunt and we'll sail back to Bell Bay and Hopetown. I realize this leaves you in a difficult position. Therefore, I ask this cleature to aid you in leaving the marsh, if possible. May the gods protect you, my friends."
With this, the serpent fluttered its wings expressively and returned to its original position facing Gawain. Everyone was silent, imagination spinning frightening scenes of battling hordes of feral hillmen.
"How do you come to be doing service for Chania?"
"I was curious when I saw their vessel. She bestowed a gift of food upon me. I accepted. Being gracious, I offered my services.
I see. It still didn't answer how she knew of these creatures and their customs, or what they ate, for that matter. He also found it interesting that the creature conversed with drawn-out hisses and wheezes, but could parrot Chania perfectly. Hopefully, he would be able to discuss it at length with her someday. For now, there were more immediate concerns. We are lost. Can you help us get to the Druid Temple? It shut its eyes in revulsion, then opened them slowly.
Much danger there, Enchanter.
Danger? On the Druid Isle?
The Queen, she has scorched it terribly. She hunts.
Flayna felt the hair on her neck prickle.
Queen?
What queen?
Of dragons. Vairi.
This is performed for a live audience. Traversity, Demons and Demigods, Part 1. Sound Blaze of the second novel were written, recorded, directed, mastered, and produced by Kurt Paul Hotelling. Copyright 2025. Character voices for Episode 29 are performed by Richard Hammer, Darcy Aradell, Puffin Muffin, Marcel Hammer, and H, the Great and Powerful. The Sextology of Novels are available through Amazon.com, on Kindle Books, can be ordered at your favorite bookseller, or can be purchased directly from the author. Merely submit a request to our email. The wonderful music for this episode of the Harkin Theater was composed and performed by the ensembles of Mocha Music, Evan McDonald, DeKaibo, Chris Haig, High Street Music of London, and licensed by PremiumBeat.com. Public domain music performances are licensed under Lieber Creative Commons. Sound effects and original Foley provided by freesound.org, Mix Kit of Victoria, Australia, Cusp Studios, and the BBC Library. This was recorded on location in the universe.